everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Angela with the podcast Refocus with Angela Stevens, and I am excited to talk to you about a guest today that I guarantee you is going to be somebody that you will remember. He has got enough energy. He's got ADHD. He's creative. He's just the most, he's the coolest person I think I've talked to in such a long time. His name is Grant Kroll. He is a learning facilitator, and he does training. He does coaching. He does communication skills in the high-tech area. He works for Dell and for many other companies. And so I'm really excited to have him on the show. He's also the author of Grantasms, and I'm going to let him talk to you about that. But welcome to our show, Grant. We graciously appreciate your time.
Why, thank you, Angela. I mean, all those wonderful adjectives, I'm thinking, I want to date this guy, and I'm straight.
Exactly. Okay, see what I mean? Okay, he's going to stump me already. Anyway, thank you again. But first of all, let's just start off with this. So Grantasms, it's a book, and they can get this on Amazon and other places. Tell us a little bit about that so we know what that is, because it's something that you really ought to write down and look into.
Oh, gosh. I mean, expecting an ADHD person to finish a book and not only talk about it for years is an accomplishment in itself. Mm-hmm. Yes. I am in that cool group with many, many challenges and many stories. So my book is called Grantasms, and you heard that right. My first name is Grant, and there's the asms, and the title is Creative Twisted Words for Cool People. And this is based on something that was just a lot of fun for me. I would always love, ever since I was a kid and began speaking, is coming up with my own words. That was probably a problem when I was a kid, because I didn't necessarily know back then and for a while what I was doing. And that was at a time in Hawaii, of all places. I happened to grow up in a space that was around, pardon the pun, don't make waves, don't stand out. And so that's very, very hard for an ADHD kid. And you don't know what you have, first of all. And I found, with all my struggles and me being a social outcast, of how eventually down the road, when I was in a really great place now, of how can I share this with people? And it came down to one thing, is how could I turn my struggles into a game? And when I found out something of that I could use these twisted words, and there are hundreds of them for all types of social situations. I mean, ADHD is one of them, but also for work, also for when I worked as a social media director, and all of it was around an invitation to a conversation. So I tell people Grantasms, it's like, it's wordplay for our social era, where you come up with a made up word or phrase with a genuine story, your own story, for an enjoyable connection. Those connections I found were like, it would help me with my ADHD, connections in my brain. So they were, in a sense, kind of like helping me put synapses together. And I would come up with words for when I would struggle, like when I would say that, oh, I would not know where I was, like I'd go up the stairs and I forget halfway where I was at. I'd say, oh, I just had a whiteout. And then I found, when I could laugh about it, wow, I'm in a good space. And I realized, why do people not change their behavior? Because they feel a sense of shame. And I would feel a sense of shame. But when I found out what's funny about ADHD, I found this is funny about ADHD, is when you can take the gift that you have and know how to unwrap it, and my gift is twisted wordplay, meaning that it's not like a dictionary. It's not like here's just some words and they're trivial and they're done. It's meaningful. It's purposeful. It's an invitation to a conversation. And I found out this is, it was improving my memory. I could focus in ways that I couldn't before. I could improve my executive function. I could improve my emotional intelligence, my EQ. All the things that were challenges for me with ADHD, I was finding that word creations made for fun connections. Because fun, for somebody like myself, is how I learn better. I mean, learning should not be boring. So I, throughout many years, I was very tech savvy. And back when I was in college and working in talk radio pre-internet, I would have to work on these things. I would have to work on my listening, but I could be creative and I could use the thoughts in my head to come up with some fun stuff. Like in person, I wouldn't just do a name tag pre-COVID. I would do a face tag because I was a professional cartoonist. So I would draw a face on my name tag. People would remark on it saying, what's that? And they liked that. If I was out with someone at like a Starbucks and they were joking about how their pastry, their dessert looks smaller than behind the window, I would call it paste trickery.
Love
so
it.
It made us feel good. Yeah. And like if somebody, what makes a social faux pas online, or someone's being a jerk online, I would just say, well, that's a digital douche. And so it's a way of diffusing the stress. So I could turn my distractions into directions. I can turn negativity into creative energy. And I could turn these things into icebreakers, which became warm social connections. So I thought, why not just put a book? Do a book, but don't make it read like a dictionary. So every single one of these grandiosms is a genuine story. If it wasn't a story that happened to me, I didn't include it in there. And I found this is really helpful for people can use as a game for how they can have an icebreaker at the office if they just want to remember something better, if they want to stand out from the fog and the noise, if they want to have a growth mindset. So this experience has been wonderful from just the connections I've made socially for it. It works where I'm at work because people ask me for help. It's a great way to train people. I mean, it makes you very empathetic. I call it creative empathy for people with different brains, people who aren't ADHD, who are neurotypical. It's playful mindfulness. It's the ability to not treat being in the present as something that you have to go but that you can be at play. So yeah, grandiosms is, I like to say, it's wordplay for our social era.
That's brilliant. It's interesting because, as you know, our company, which is Refocus the Creative Office, is create all of our products are actually created through the eyes of a child with ADHD. And that child is my child, and that he was diagnosed in the fifth grade and I was diagnosed at 45. And so I, you know, and by the way, you dated yourself earlier when you used the word pre-internet, and I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, when we talk about products that help people, focus and memory is a huge issue. So I do want to ask you a couple of questions on that. Tell us, first of all, you grew up in Hawaii, but how did you know that you had ADHD? And when were you diagnosed, to give our listeners kind of an idea of, you know, when you were aware of this?
Well, I would say there's the part where you know you're different, and without an understanding and giving it a name, you have such anxiety. Sometimes in worse situations, you have such despair. Like for me, I knew that I was having something that made me not normal, but without understanding what you have, I would say I felt that way since 5 years old. I only got a name for it when I got diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 33. I'm 50. And that was at a time where there was starting to become understanding. But I remember my parents took me to a psychologist at the age of 4.5 years old. And I still have the manual typewritten letter describing everything that's ADHD, but they did not describe it as ADHD because, unfortunately, my psychologist then in Hawaii seemed to not really have ADHD as something that was widely understood or treated back then when I was a kid. And that caused me a large amount of problems. And so I didn't have parents. They tried the best they could, but they just didn't get the help that they needed. And an ADHD kid is not oftentimes a very easy kid to live with, especially when one parent is that way.
Wait, that would be me, my son, and you now.
and me. So I had all the bad things, like getting beaten up as a kid. The teachers, when I would do the things like doodling, then I would punish for it. I would fidget. I would try to go in the back room. I get punished for it. All the things that you're encouraged to do today, I was punished for it. Fortunately, in high school, I got to be a competitive distance runner in cross country and track and soccer. So I had an outlet. But then when I get into the working world, and then these things are taken away from me, I got married at an age that was probably much earlier than I should have been with somebody who had all the things that are not really compatible with ADHD. But only when I was 33 did I get a diagnosis. And first off, there's so much to be said about having a supportive partner. I have a supportive partner today, but back then who I was with was just not capable of it because of the issue she had to deal with. And I remember to this day when she said, "It's not fair. You're supposed to be taking care of me."
Right.
And making me think, "Oh my gosh, I've done this. How could I do this to her?" Right. Which is crazy, of course. But it only be later that I realized it was a gift. I didn't get the right medication. And that's common. Mm-hmm. But you have to have a supportive partner. You have to have a supportive system. So now on top of that, I had major sleep apnea from what's called crowded mouth syndrome because I was around smokers for a lot, even though I clearly don't. I would develop problems with my throat and I would produce a lot of excess flesh, like my tonsils, my uvula, my upper soft palate. So I was literally choking. So imagine ADHD and a lack of oxygen to the brain. And I would crash my car several times during the day. So I tried it first, but then I thought, well, the medication doesn't make me feel like myself. And again, I can only say how important it is to have someone who's supportive. I did not have someone because they said, This is just how everyone feels. They were wrong. I was not myself because I take medication today that's just 18 milligrams of Concerta, but I have coffee, I playfully meditate, I walk, I have my brain game, all the things because I know myself better. But that's why sometimes people who are trying to do the right things, they still feel like there's something wrong with them or they're a bad person. So take it today, 17 years later. I would say the big breakthrough for me was when I went to an ADHD support group in Chicago, and I lived in Chicago for 21 years. And I'm around these people and I'm thinking, my gosh, these people are freaking annoying. And then I had the revelation that, oh my gosh, I must come across that same way.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's interesting. We just did a podcast with Melissa Orlov on relationships and marriages with one partner who might be ADHD and the challenges on both sides. So if you haven't listened to that, I would encourage anyone listening to go back and listen to that. She's a great, it was a great podcast that we did on that. So after they listen to that and to you, they'll completely understand that. And I will say that the people that I meet today who are ADHD are absolutely brilliant. They are talented, and not talking about myself, but they are really, they're really unique. And they're almost like they have double the energy. And people sometimes think that they're, you know, very hyper if they've got the hyper portion of it, but really they have a lot of energy, but it's difficult to sometimes channel that energy into where things need to be completed and a way to focus. And it's interesting because you and I had talked about before the show in the neurodiversity area and the workforce. And I wanted to touch on that because I think you're so talented in that. And the fact that you have worked with Dell tells a lot about the types of people that you connect to in the high-tech area. And so if there's any companies that are listening to this, we'll put your information on our website because you would really love having him come to your company and work with you in the communication areas. And tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're good at with Dell and high-tech companies, because there's a lot of areas that people can work in, that a lot of different departments. And so, you know, let's say a company's listening to this and they were interested in you and they wanted to bring you in. What is your specialty and what do you bring to the table?
Okay. I like to say that I am a creative communication skills coach for high-tech folks, or as I like to say, I build communication games for different brains. And communication is more than just us like talking here. It's also where you put your things to share with somebody else. Like it could be a file repository. It can be a productivity system. It could be mind mapping. I mean, I do lots of visual communications. I have a graphic design degree. I also have a video production background. I also used to be the YouTube channel manager for the agency that managed the Procter & Gamble accounts. So I manage the Swiffer account and the Olay North America YouTube channel. So I jokingly say I know a lot about women's skincare. It's because I've optimized like hundreds of videos and those things stick with you. So what I'm really
good at... And he's got great skin too. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I am Metro. I am proud of it. I'm in my 50s. Yes. I'm taking care of myself. No leathery skin here. I combine the creativity with the productivity. I have equal left brain and right brain. I can speak to the analyst. I can speak to the IT person. I can speak to the creative group. I can speak to HR. I can speak to legal because I understand issues of intellectual property with video. Video is my specialty. Digital events are my specialty. Training people in real time, dealing with people who are really, really smart, but maybe siloed because they only deal with people like themselves. And that might be the equivalent of what we say, a nerd or a dork if they haven't worked on their social skills. It's just knowing how to communicate with them when you can empathize with them and think about you don't remove yourself from the equation, but it's almost like you have to be, like I call myself, a Dell to English translator. There are hundreds and hundreds of acronyms. So I am someone who can cut through the fog and the noise and make communication fun again, because it's not communication if people don't get each other. It's miscommunication. And that means a loss of productivity, working on the wrong things, lower morale, and lower energy, by the way. I mean, the good thing about folks like us, you and I, as entrepreneurs, even though I jokingly call myself an entrepreneur because I'm always trying to learn something and figure things
We're
out.
We're self-help junkies, aren't we? I know, it's crazy.
Yes. Yes, I'm into self-helpies. I like getting all this stuff. But at the same time, there is a time to work in your business and then on your business. And I I help other companies find the words to get points across. I help with playing communication games for how do you start off with something fun? And it's tough in these times of COVID because people think that, okay, we don't need to have the team building exercise or we can cut out the icebreakers. That might be a virtual water cooler, but what they're missing is, hey, why don't we just go in a Zoom room and we just talk about stuff? What I'm really good at is I can say, what if there's a thing that maybe there's an obstacle to overcome or a problem we want to solve, or maybe there's just something we talk about because it's good to talk. It's good to talk with people who aren't like you. And people too often, including at tech companies, they silo themselves with people who are very, very smart, but they can have a very, very big gap, and that gap is communicating with different brains. So I come in. I am great when I lead the Zoom rooms or the Microsoft Teams rooms, or sometimes I'll send training in a video message. I know how people's brains operate beforehand. I take the time to learn about them. I'll go on their LinkedIn profile. I don't just go in cold. I'll come in the room 5 minutes early and have an icebreaker. I might say, okay, anyone here who would like me to pour them a mixed drink? But the thing is, we're all virtual, so that's not going to happen. But people aren't expecting that.
And
I'll say, what are you having on your hamburger?
And let me tell you, I'm going to interrupt you there because to our audience, let me tell you, he does do his research because he knew everything about our company and the podcast and about my son and everything. It's a little creepy, but he actually does his homework, and it's actually such a benefit and something that more people should do and they don't. So you do that very well.
Thank you. I'm a nice creep.
Yeah. So tell us, and one thing I wanted to ask you, so in today's workforce, you know, you've got, you know, you and I are near the same age group, but you've got millennials, right? And you've got this newer group that's come out, and they think very differently. And so when these individuals are graduating from college today, let's take that group, and they want to go work, why is it that they would be attracted to a company like a Microsoft or a Dell or, you know, a high-tech company like that? What is it, first of all, that they're interested in? And, you know, why is it that they're going to those companies versus going to a P&G or something like that? I mean, what is their drive? Because something that you and I noticed is that even I've noticed with hiring people over the years is that in my generation, you know, we would pick up the phone, we would call, even though we have text and email, we still do that. That generation, they really don't. What I have found is that they really, if I give them an assignment, they don't call. They will get the answer, but they don't call. And it's very interesting to me. You and I could talk about the psychology of that as well, but it's a very different way of thinking for that generation. Would you agree with that?
I would say when you're talking about any group, and there could always be generational differences, but I do find that it's easy to get caught up in that. I mean, just like there are conservatives, liberals, progressives, anarchists, the whole gamut across all age groups. I would say millennials, Gen Zs, are more open to new ideas. Mm-hmm. They are not set in their ways. They are also those people who can do multiple things, although they can be subject to the same issues of anxiety, just that the challenge they have is all their lives are around a digital ecosystem. I had to work on these things and to deal with the awkwardness, to deal with the missed cues with my ADHD. I had to deal with that uncomfortable stuff in person. And it's not to say that a lot of millennials don't, but it's more common, millennials and Gen Zs, to not work on those things because they're uncomfortable. But I know that there for those who do, who blend the digital with the organic, they thrive because they're open to a lot of stuff. You asked about who goes into high tech. I call it the play to pay, because high tech is fun. It's exciting. It's like you're seeing you're working with engineers, you're working with great minds, you're working with people who use this technology in ways you never thought were possible. And Dell's a fantastic company for how much good it does in the world. So there's also the idea of what is their point of view, like a company that is willing to take a stand on something. What is their ethos? What do they stand for? What are their values?
Or a company with a cause. You know, they like a company with a cause. And also, and not to interrupt you, but one thing I wanted to ask you about was when you talk about careers, that I have heard, I got to think really quick, it's the gaming industry, that the engineering side of the gaming industry, that a lot of, especially, you know, a lot of guys that are graduating college are going into that area because they've been playing video games for years.
Yeah, but here, there's an interesting story I have with that. And by the way, don't worry about interrupting me because my brain interrupts me all the time.
Well, no, and I want to catch you on your thoughts because we're, like I said, you really have so much knowledge in this area. I just don't want to miss that. So go ahead, please.
Okay, so what I have not shared is after I was married, I was in a relationship with somebody who was a chair of a digital media department at a college. So I became an adjunct faculty member teaching digital project management to gamers. Mm. And I looked at it as, okay, they're very talented in some spaces, but they haven't yet understood the business world. And I was not about to do a once a week class for 4 hours when it was dark and I knew they were tired. I said, instead, I worked with one of the very first wikis out there. And I said, okay, one of you, you're going to rotate in the role of the client. And I'm going to say, and now you're going to rotate in the role of, all right, you're going to be the salesperson. You're going to be the one who's the project manager. But they all had to understand each other's roles so that they can get ready for the working world. And it wasn't just about, well, I just want to do games.
That is fantastic. That right there, if you take anything from this conversation, that right there is fantastic because you're exactly right. They don't understand the other side or they haven't had a chance to work in the business world.
Yeah. And that's what creative empathy is. It's putting yourself in someone's shoes. Because once you're willing to do the uncomfortable and when you can socialize, when you can talk with somebody about it, it's like having a gym partner. Or it's like when I was in the military at the age of 18 to pay for college. I was forced to be around people who are nothing like me and most of who I just would not care to be around, but I had to learn how to get along with them. And that was the problem I would see at other companies is like people who might be in tech not associating with people who weren't in tech, people like who might be on the marketing team not associating with those people who are in customer care. And that's wrong. I make a point of getting to know different groups. I have conversations with the person who handles procurement and billing at Dell. I know what their dog's name is. I know their favorite food. I know their gripes. I cheat a bit because I take these notes in Evernote here or there, and that sounds kind of creepy, but I do it because, or I write it down because writing is a way where you're having a physical connection to the thought. And I found these things are great for when there's so much information coming at you and you can just step back, you can be playfully mindful, you can start to see connections in ways when you just learn to step back and you don't have to react to so much in the world. It's not about taking everything down. It's about just being an attentive listener and looking for the things that you might have in common and saying, oh, now's the time I can share something to show I'm listening to them. People want to be validated. They don't want to hear about how great you think you are. They want to make themselves feel great.
That's interesting. So going back to the generational aspect, a lot of things that they're going into is high tech, and I'm just fascinated with this area. What are other areas that a lot of college students are going into that is new for our generation, right? That are different fields that maybe they don't know about.
Well, if we're not going to talk about the gig economy, because I don't, I think I had my own business at the age of 22, and I called it Grandtastic Designs, and I had it for a long time. And so I still say about stuff I do that's grandtastic. I think with today, there's so much you can learn. I would say in one area, there are those who get led down the path of I'm going to work in social media and be an influencer without realizing that all that glitters is not gold. For me, it was working at a comedy club and then realizing, oh my gosh, the comedy club owners are stiffing me on pay, or working in radio and realizing that they were skirting labor laws by not paying taxes and listing me as an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. So where I connect with younger folks today on where they're going into, well, I can speak in a few areas. I can speak in like for agencies, like creative agencies, and I can speak for tech. And I even, when I was doing this book, after my spouse's, I call her my spouse-ish since she's my life partner of 11 years, but we're not married. When her dad passed away, I decided to do this book. I'm just going to work part-time at a jewelry store. And there was a few young ladies there, millennials, who were looking at it as a way of, I want to take photos of myself around jewelry for my Instagram page.
Wow.
I would, where are they going to? It's like, I would say the places that are more about that, where they can thrive with their energy, when they can thrive around being social, where they place a currency, they place a value, like somebody older might place a monetary value. To them, social is currency. Who can they be exposed to? And earlier in pre-COVID, where they could travel, where they could be, I mean, that growth mindset, the excitement of things that are new. is really good. Things that are that give them energy around being social, connecting with other people. I mean, there's a dark side of social. There's the look at me, look at me, look at me social, which is vanity metrics, which I would never advocate. When you get past that, you deal with some very, very good, bright, empathetic individuals because they make organic connections that makes them feel just in a good state and that they give so much energy to other people and they just support other people for what they're doing. So I'd really say it comes down to companies that are about causes, that live their values, that will take the 10% pay cut. I mean, or that will not, they won't necessarily get and say, here's the biggest paycheck, but about, we'll pay you for the time for what's your favorite charity, or let's spend this time around the water cooler, or let's have pizza night. Those kind of, I mean, younger people value it. And quite honestly, I think people who even go back to the workforce value that more too.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that's really interesting. I always like to ask people that question because a lot of times, as many people know, I own three businesses, wonder why. But you know, one of those is a search firm. And so people will say, I don't understand why my son or daughter isn't getting that job, or, you know, and I've explained to them many times, it's just a different workforce and they'll find their journey, but it's their journey. So it's, you know, don't tell them what to do, encourage them, find their talents, because, and I want to highlight something about that before we started this podcast. You know, we were talking about time and you and I were throwing around a few ideas. And I said, you know, the problem with that is the time that you have to invest in that one area. And all this, you know, our company and this podcast is all around focus. So let's talk about that with you for a second. You know, you've got a lot going on in your life, right? And you do a lot of work with Dell, you do a lot of work with training, and you're really, really talented. But how does somebody like you that has so many different things that they could be doing and are doing, how do you go about time management and how do you go about focusing? Because sometimes, especially, you know, people with ADHD usually have another area. It might be anxiety. It may be depression. It may be another area that's concentrated into, you know, along with their ADHD. And so they can sometimes, and I found myself doing the same thing, finding where the day's gone or the week's gone, and they didn't accomplish what they wanted to do. So, and a lot of older people struggle with memory. So what about you? How do you focus on a day-to-day basis?
Well, what I like to do is first how to describe ADHD folks to other people is we have many oars in the water. The challenge for us sometimes is getting to shore.
That's really good. That's a great.
Every place looks exciting. And while we're even the place that we think is exciting, what attracts the ADHD person is something that's new. It's novel. It's the excitement of new. And once you realize that that is where, what is ADHD compared to other people? It's people get distracted. With ADHD people, it's about intensity. And intensity is the frequency of it happening and the amplification of it happening. So once you understand that, and once you know what you have to deal with, I've done several presentations. There's a presentation I've given to a marketing group, and it's up on SlideShare called Social Media and ADHD, How to Turn Distractions into Directions. I first start my day with, I might do the Calm app for meditation. I'm going to be honest, I don't do it every day. I don't feel like doing it every day. People lie when I say, I do this and I do this and I do that. No, you probably do once of it, like once a week. But you make yourself sound good. I don't. I have coffee every day, except maybe 6 days a week. That's what I have. I like doing something creative and fun. What do I really do? I like having my little YouTube clips of Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers, Trevor Noah, maybe Samantha Bee. The comedy gets me going, but I also know I need to calm my brain down. So what I do is I have my whiteboard. I like doing my marker on it. It's double-sided so I can flip it over, one for my work at Dell and one for my creative passion, which is GURKS at Work, Communication Games for Different Brains. And I only write three things on there because I first use a program called Todoist to put everything in there. I might mind map on a week to say, let me look at the big picture, but now focus on one thing. And then I make a commitment to say, okay, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to write it in my 5-minute gratitude journal about saying, what do I want to accomplish today? Because what's so important is about the routine sets your goals. You don't have to feel like saying, if I just say I'm going to do 10 things, I'm productive. Problem with ADHD folks like myself, we think of, if we say we're going to do something, oh, you know what? I'm an accomplished person.
Right.
No, you're not. It's like talk is not an accomplishment. And that's a challenge when you're a talker. We're both talkers. So what I do is I give myself words for the times I screw up. Like I call it messy tasking when I get distracted because I want to do master tasking. Never do multitasking because we do not task switch well. It might be fine for something that uses one part of the brain where you don't have to do deep thought, but don't do two things that require the same type of brain intensity. Like I can have not exactly a stand-up desk, although I used to have one. I have a roly-poly stool I can move around. So it's kind of like a rocking chair in a 360 degree. I can do little stretching exercises. Balancing is really good. So if you look at my home office, like, what is Grant doing? I am training my brain to learn by having fun. So I start with that. I give myself words. Like I say, I had a whiteout, or I give like no to friction. I say no to friction when I forget to turn off the notifications on my digital devices. I come up with words for other people. Like when someone has too many apps on their phone, I call it polyappery because they forget what those apps were sometimes and they're trying to make them all get along. So the humor, it centers me. It brings me back to what I need to focus on and what I need to do. But I just put those three things. And then at the end of the day, I go in there again when I remember to do it, because sometimes I don't and it's okay. But I'm training myself for being forgiving myself and knowing that I'm making small steps. Like with Gurks at Work, what's the next thing? It's going to be my second book, but I start off small. I start off with, I just do podcast shows like this. I get the word out. I do my weekly LinkedIn video. That's been doing really well. Because that's my audience. I'm now building the YouTube channel. Well, hopefully when people hear this podcast, they'll see going to Gurks at Work, because right now you can go to Grant Kroll and you can see me there and I got a ton of videos. So I'm doing this in steps before I even get to an online course, before I get to the keynote speaker. And you know what? That's good. Mm-hmm. It's good to see what's the final space, but now and go back and then just pick. And if you want to do a second thing, say Friday is going to be my second thing or Thursday is going to be this other thing. But make sure you look at it and you give yourself a weekly review, because otherwise you're like, huh? Right. And people are like, yeah, Grant, you told me about the book you were going to do 2 years ago. I don't want to be that person.
Yeah. And it's interesting because we interview a lot of authors and, you know, it's like writing a screenplay, writing a book. You get like that, just, you know, you can't get started, you know, and it's really hard. You want to do it, you know, you have to do it, but you don't know how to start. So any advice for people who maybe want to write a book, but they just can't get started?
Oh, I was going to say hire a ghostwriter.
I love that. Yeah.
Well, there's the truthful way. And yes, I have a lot of advice for that, because I would hear even people with ADHD podcast shows talking about their books for so many years before I was doing my book. What I say is do small as one is have a lot of ideas for your book and what could be individual articles. Because I did this book based on my committing to articles for my doing little mini posts. And because I was just coming up with words over and over and over, and then I would get feedback from people. So I say the ideal thing is to join a book publishing group, like put money into it. If you don't have money, join the free groups, but make it a savings, because when you put skin in the game, you take it more seriously. Ideally have a mentor, have somebody who's done a book in their field who can help you out. Like right now, I use a program called Vellum so that I can self-publish, and you don't have to be a graphic designer, but it publishes right to Amazon. Why pay a service? The first part is just have fun. Have fun doing it. And then when wait till your first draft is done, then you show it to other people. Then you probably get people who are your friends, but people who are going to buy your book ultimately are not the ones who know you. It's how to get in front of people who don't know you. So that's why I say have a savings to be part of a book coaching group. I joined a business coaching group that had several authors, and it gave me the support, the motivation, because you need that. You need to go in and feel a bit accountable. I recommend having an accountability partner. But I also really say is just outline it and talk about it. For some people who talk a lot, consider getting something that's like dictation software. There are tools that you can just go into audio and you talk with somebody about what could this chapter be. And you'll find just by having these conversations, you could hire someone to transcribe those conversations, and then you start to see patterns, you start to see connections. But I always say it comes down to who are you trying to serve, what are the problems you're trying to solve, how can you empathize with them, what's your story that you can tell concisely, and what will make you feel like you're not just having fun, but that you're doing something really purposeful and unique. So I think that's step one, but that's an important step one, is to get focus and take it seriously enough of hold yourself accountable. You don't do your 500 words, then okay, that's $10 that's going to a charity you hate. Hold yourself accountable.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. So so I could talk to you forever, and I've learned so much already in this conversation. But one thing I wanted to ask you though, and not overlook, is we had talked a little bit before about the workforce, and you had talked a little bit about the neurodiversity, and that a lot of high tech companies are really looking at that area. And I'm not sure that we talked a little bit about that, but you specialize in helping companies with that area. Is that correct? And if so, can you talk to us just a little bit about that? Because some companies, they're small, companies that are starting out, there's medium sized, there's very large companies as well. And you work with all levels, right? I mean, you know how to do that because you know how to find the audience and how to communicate to that audience, whether they're working on a remote basis or, when they're going back to the office.
I really do. And I didn't just come into this because it really wasn't an industry. There are organizations and companies that will deal with EQ, emotional intelligence, but they don't necessarily have a tech background. And to be very frank, is I will see people who are longtime EQ experts, but it's very clear they aren't doing their social media. They're not around for the conversation. They probably don't even understand how their Zoom works. And it's obvious. And so their communication sucks online. It really does. Just because you might be good in the face-to-face way, in the traditional ways, doesn't mean you've learned how to adapt. So where I'm really good is I'm tech savvy, but I'm socially savvy, and I'm empathetic because these are all the things that I suffered with for other people and what they're struggling. So I have helped out these workforces. It's just because this has been just from what I've done working in tech, but it wasn't a job in tech. It's just become more and more a part of what I've done to be successful and to make other people successful. So it was only in the past 6 months that from my work at Dell that I learned about their neurodiversity program. And then I realized that it was a great program for people, but I also realized there's going to be challenges in the times of COVID where you have to cut things out or cut things back. And I thought, but there's also a challenge because these programs, which were being promoted by professors, were only being geared, or only their studies were only being done for the biggest of the big, for the Dell, for the Microsoft, for the Google, and their studies. And it's a very new space, but more and more companies are understanding that the way for them to be successful today is to hire a neurodiverse workforce. Here's where I come in, is from my working with so many different groups, from my having a business and from my working in tech companies, but also working in marketing and working in creative agencies, working in different types of communication spaces, and even working in retail. Heck, working in the government,
right?
Working in the military, a lot of stuff. So I am diverse with my work background, and I am neurodiverse, but I also get neurotypical people, the ones we call normal. I mean, normal isn't a bad thing, and ADHD isn't a bad thing. They're both very good things when people understand how to communicate with each other. So what I do and what I love doing, I do this at Dell. I build out things like we should use this productivity program like Trello because this is the level that people in our group can learn. Or I say, I use Evernote, and half the people might say, what's that? And I'll show them. I show, I don't tell, and I show them because I already learn what are their challenges and problems and how do they learn. So I help, like just say with my own group, I'll lead the training to first ask, what's the area that would be the most helpful to people? For now, it's a video platform. So I do it by saying, if you submit your questions first, and then I'll say this will be recorded, but I'll say this is I'll do some snack size videos of the how-tos that we can share with the other teams we work with. So I am really, really good at understanding how different brains work, but I'm also good at saying the way you get people's focus, their continued concentrated attention, is by making it fun, and dare I say, making it a game. I come in by making learning a game, making getting along a game, making, oh my gosh, we got to get this thing, we have 3 weeks. You trick your brain into making it a game with creative communication.
Love it. So, okay. So I've got two major questions. So the first one is talking about fun. What do you, Grant, what do you do for fun in your life?
Besides all this twisted wordplay,
yeah.
I love the podcast shows.
Okay.
I love documentaries. On my YouTube channel, there's my failed attempt at a documentary, but it got me several million views and interviewed on other people's documentary shows. So I'm not shy with a camera in strange places. So I love doing things with being in front of the camera. I love talk shows. Obviously, can you tell?
Yeah.
I do, and my days in competitive distance running, but my knees say no freaking way, Grant. Mm-hmm. I love going out into places that are like, there's a mountain to sea trail. There's the Appalachian Trail here. I live in Durham, North Carolina. It's like about 15 minutes away, but there's tons of craft beer places mm-hmm. too. I loves me the craft beer. My stomach says otherwise. I'm not fat. I have extra stomach muscles, but that is not going to fool anybody. I love that. I mean, you're asking an ADHD person, what do you do for fun? What do I not do for fun is the question.
Exactly. Life is fun. And I always say, you know, our one of our sayings is, you know, we all get so busy that sometimes we have to stop, take a moment, and refocus. And you got to have fun, but you also got to have the downtime. So I love that. And I love the idea. And walking and exercise, as you and I know, is so important, even if you're just walking. It does so much for you. So, but I have another big question for you, Grant. So when you need to really focus and you've got a great meeting to go to, and you've got to, you know, this is an important one, or you're going to be speaking in front of a big crowd, and you get in your car and you're going to that meeting, what is the music, the song, or the artist that you listen to that gets you focused?
Ooh, a big question. Perhaps the biggest question of the day. Okay. I like to say, because I want to throw your son Drake off a bit and with his planned playlist. I want to say Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back. And I want to say, this is what I'm going to play as I'm speaking, as I'm dancing in front of an audience. But that might look even weirder because I'm
virtual. Record that on video. Yeah, definitely.
It's like, what's wrong with this boy? But that would not be true. What I didn't mention is I worked as a DJ in college too. So I still have my old playlist on cassette tapes from those days. But before my tangent goes on a tangent, I will say what I remember that even though I don't listen as much today, but if I'm doing something that is big, I don't need help getting motivated. But if I want to do something where I need to psych myself up, I will listen to the best song from the first Beverly Hills Cop by the late former Eagles band member and songwriter Glenn Frey, The Heat Is On. I would always listen to that in a running.
That is great. And you know, it's funny because we forget about that until we see that show. And so what a great song. And so we're going to have a lot of fun with that. But first of all, you know, Grant, thank you so much for being on our show today. It's a pleasure getting to know you and your wisdom, your advice, and your energy is so exciting that I feel like I could talk to you forever. So thank you again for being on our show.
Well, thank you. This has been Angelistic.
I love that's my new name. This podcast has been brought to you by Refocus the Creative Office. Follow us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube, just about anywhere. We have so much going on and we've got 4 new products coming out. So you'll want to stay tuned. Also, some of the new episodes that are coming out on the podcast are going to be amazing. Really, really unique individuals that they are definitely people that you will want to learn how they focus and how they refocus. Have a great week.